How does error find its way into the church? I've written an article in the latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal titled From Exception to Rule, How Error Replaces Truth in the Church, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jordan Cooper details his journey from Calvinism to Lutheranism. The latest Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
To have innocent little 12-year-old girls be forced to have a government injection through an executive order is just flat out wrong. That should never be done.
If I had it to do over again, I would have done it differently.
The term Ponzi scheme, I think, is over the top and unnecessary and frightful to many people.
It has been called a Ponzi scheme by many people long before me.
One, make our tax code competitive with the world. Two, get regulations to work to encourage enterprise.
You give people the opportunity to risk their capital by lowering the tax burden on them, by lowering the regulatory climate, and you will see an American economy that takes off like a rocket ship.
We are still in danger, but most of the danger comes by our lack of wisdom on how we run our foreign policy.
Some of the voices from Monday night's Tea Party debate with all of the GOP hopefuls, the presidential candidates, at least the field so far, gathered together in one long, actually remarkably long string of podiums across a stage, multicolored, brightly lit, hosted by CNN. And they talked about a number of issues, including those that you heard in immigration and several other things. We're going to be talking about the content of last night's Tea Party debate with these GOP presidential candidates for the first half hour of Issues Etc. live this Tuesday afternoon, September the 13th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard will be our guest. He'll join us live from Washington, D.C. After that, we'll round off the first hour talking about 1 Corinthians 1, where Paul says, I was determined to know nothing among you except Christ and Him crucified, talking about the preaching of the cross and why it is central to the life of the church then and today. Tomorrow, the church remembers Holy Cross Day. Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest. In the second hour of the program, we'll talk about one of the readings for Holy Cross Day, which is actually the Old Testament reading of the serpent being raised on the pole, the bronze serpent, if you remember that story, from the Old Testament of people's travails in the wilderness. Dr. Nathan Jastrom will be our guest from Concordia University, Wisconsin. Then in the last few minutes of the program, Craig Parton will join us to talk about the International Religious Freedom Report that just came out. We'll talk about human rights. Craig Parton, an attorney in Santa Barbara, California, will be our guest, a regular guest here on the program. You can join us for the next 2 hours. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and our Twitter address, @issuesetc. Mark Hemingway is the online editor of the Weekly Standard, and he joins us from Washington, D.C. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Now, all I saw were GOP candidates. Why was it called a Tea Party debate?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I mean, look, everyone on that stage last night was, you know, to some extent or another, trying to claim the mantle of the Tea Party. I mean, it's one of the most, you know, energetic grassroots political movements that the country's seen in, you know, possibly decades. So, you know, and obviously the Tea Party's right of center, you know, obviously the Republican Party's right of center. So, you know, there is some overlap there.
Who actually pulled that off? Who actually was able, based upon last night's debate, to claim the Tea Party mantle?
I mean, I think they actually, you know, they all can to varying degrees. Now, the one exception might possibly be Mitt Romney. You know, Romney, of course, is decided that, you know, his place in this group, motley group of candidates is to be the sensible center guy. So when Rick Perry talks about, you know, Social Security being a Ponzi scheme and other things like that, Romney's decided that, you know, that that's an outrageous thing to say and that, you know, American people aren't going to, you know, like it. So he's trying to, you know, steer more toward the center. But, you know, it's obvious that, you know, people like like Herman Cain, who's a presidential candidate, he got his start basically on the Tea Party lecture circuit. Michelle Bachmann founded the Tea Party Caucus in Congress. Rick Perry is very much the embodiment of more conservative grassroots Texas voters that have sort of run in contrast to the big oil Republican establishment people in Dallas. Pretty much everybody on there, one shape or another, has at least policies that the Tea Party would like.
How would you define the Tea Party in two sentences, Mark?
Can you take the rainbow and put it in your pocket, Todd? No, I can't really do that, but I'll try, except to say that it is basically a conservative grassroots movement that seeks to make the Republican establishment less centrist and more, focused on ideological conservative principles.
Is it inherently a religious movement? Because in the media, it's often depicted as right-wing religious zealots.
Absolutely not. I mean, one of the great strengths of the Tea Party, of course, is that it's decentralized and there isn't really, one group or person that speaks for the Tea Party. So, yes, there are plenty of religious Tea Party, conservatives, but there are plenty of, Tea Partiers that are just flat-out economic libertarians and don't really care much about social issues. So it's really unfair to portray it as a religious movement. That's just absurd.
I heard the debate described on National Public Radio as essentially Rick Perry and everybody taking shots at him. And I think the scoreboard at the end was that Michelle Bachmann probably landed the most solid blow with the issue of allegedly an executive order requiring underage girls to get a vaccination for human papillomavirus.
I can actually see that assessment, and it certainly was true that everyone ganged up on Rick Perry last night, and certainly Michelle Bachmann made quite a bit of hay out of that HPV issue where Rick Perry issued an executive order forcing young women to get an immunization that was supposedly going to, prevent cervical cancer. There's a lot of talk today. Rush Limbaugh said that Michelle Bachmann, quote, jumped the shark today because she was claiming that someone came up to her and told her that the HPV vaccination caused, quote, mental retardation, which, is just kind of an absurd and ridiculous claim. I'm not so sure that at the end of the day there that Michelle Bachmann's going to get that much credit for taking on Rick Perry.
How did Perry emerge last night, at least as you saw the debate?
He didn't really help himself. He certainly could have done better, he didn't do particularly well in the first debate. Romney had a strong performance, he really needs to make it clear to in everyone's mind that he's the front runner over Romney. The polls have been showing that, but Romney has a lot of name recognition and a lot of money, so. Rick Perry really needs to, not just, pop up on the scene and look more electable on paper. At some point, he's got to start talking the talk and convincing people that he can persuade voters and appear electable. And I'm not sure he sealed the deal on that in these first two debates. Now, he hasn't done poorly, and I don't think he's necessarily harmed himself greatly or anything like that, but he's got to be a little more in command of the details, and he's got to be a little more cognizant of the fact that he's going to get attacked from all sides. But if people forget what a terrible debater George Bush was in the summer of 99. He's got plenty of room to improve, and Perry's a very good politician with a good work ethic. So I suspect that he will improve if this goes on long enough.
What does it mean at this stage, Mark, to be the front runner? I mean, does that simply mean you're polling better than the half dozen to a dozen other people being put up for consideration, a plurality of that survey? Or does it mean money? Does it mean machine? What does it mean?
It means sort of, a lot of different things. I mean, there is no one thing to say about what it means to be the front runner at this point. Certainly, yes, a lot of it just has to do with the fact that you're leading in the polls, because that's the most blatant indication that you are electable. And certainly Rick Perry can claim that mantle. But beyond that, I mean, there's also a lot of other factors that come in, you know, with being the front runner, you know, how well you can raise money and other things like that, you know, that allow you to gear up for a campaign very quickly in short order that's going to snowball into a big national event. And so, you know, people have to keep, you know, Rick Perry's got a little bit to go, he's got to go a little bit further on sort of all these fronts. He's got to establish that, you know, the American people like him, and he instills, you know, confidence and trust in terms of his public persona and appearances. He's got to prove that he can, you know, raise money, and he's got to, you know, stay atop the polls.
Without trying to eliminate anyone too prematurely, who do you think didn't belong up there last night?
Well, you know, I like Kermit Cain. He means well, but he's just not a terribly substantive guy. I mean, he's been talking about this 999 plan he has for taxes, where it's a series of 9% tax rates that seem to have been plucked out of thin air. I just don't see much there, you know, in terms of policy substance. I mean, I mean, Newt Gingrich is a great guy, and he's got a great history of you know, being, you know, the leader in the Republican Party. He's clearly an impressive guy, and he always has interesting and fun things to say at the debates that people want him on the stage. But I mean, what is he polling at? I mean, he's, you know, a non-entity, and the same is true for Rick Santorum. Only, you know, he's less entertaining in the debates. So, you know, at some point they're just really going to have to start, you know, narrowing down the field.
With about a minute here, what about Ron Paul? Does he still belong there?
Ron Paul has a very credible base of support, and not only that, he has a very different ideological take because he's, you know, such a principled libertarian. So, you know, I actually think that he totally belongs in these debates. I don't personally agree with Ron Paul on a lot of things, and I don't think most Republican voters do, but he is very serious about a lot of convictions that Republican voters do agree with, and he's provocative in other ways and forces other candidates to defend their positions in ways, I think, that make them sharper, and I think he adds something to the Republican Party as a result.
When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Mark Hemingway, live this Tuesday afternoon, September the 13th, getting an assessment of yesterday evening's Tea Party debate with GOP presidential candidates. We'll talk about some of the other issues that were raised. In particular, what shall we talk about? The president's job plan and also immigration, big hot-button issues. We'll see what they had to say last night. Mark Hemingway is our guest, online editor for the Weekly Standard. Here's a resource for your high school or college-aged child or grandchild as they begin a new school year. It's Concordia's Complete Bible Handbook for Students. You'll find an introduction with answers to questions like, is the Bible reliable and trustworthy? Who wrote the Bible? And more. You can order Concordia's Complete Bible Handbook for Students by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Concordia's Complete Bible Handbook for Students.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois, and Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Monday's Tea Party debate with GOP presidential candidates. Mark Hemingway is our guest, online editor for the Weekly Standard. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Did the jobs plan that was proposed by the president come up in the debate, and what was said, if anything, Mark?
Well, yeah, it did come up. You know, there wasn't a lot of in-depth discussion about what's in it, because that's obviously still evolving. I mean, the general consensus is that everyone views the president's jobs plan as more of the same. You know, a lot of the same infrastructure projects and stimulus spending that they tried in the first stimulus bill that didn't work necessarily. But there's this very prominent sort of left-wing dogma that they didn't spend enough on the first stimulus bill, which is going to make it extra hard to convince Republican voters that it's a good idea. So the candidates were understandably or derisive, given where they're coming from, of the president's jobs plan.
Immigration was a topic of discussion. Was there any real disagreement among the GOP candidates there for the debate?
Well, there actually was, because Rick Perry, actually, when he was as governor of Texas, has signed a piece of legislation that allows illegal immigrants to go to school and pursue a path to citizenship, and get in-state tuition, actually, at state universities. There are actually other, obviously the number of the other candidates are much more hawkish on immigration. Michelle Bachmann in particular went after him for this. Even Romney, I think, tried to score a few shots on that, even though Romney's sort of more nominally to the center. Immigration is definitely an issue that really motivates people for some reason. It's just one of these real lightning rod issues. And, everybody's eager to knock down the front runner, so they see that as a good wedge against Perry. But it's interesting, because he's constantly being portrayed as this, extreme, sharp-elbowed conservative, but this is one issue where Rick Perry's definitely not. He's probably more to the center than maybe every other candidate on the stage, except for Ron Paul.
On the subject of Ron Paul, you mentioned him before and just now. He brought up the issue of foreign policy. Was that any big part of this debate, especially with regard to the war and the unfolding situation, kind of our, creeping aggression or creeping mission with regard to Libya and other countries?
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. Ron Paul actually got booed rather loudly at one point, because he went off on his usual and sort of expected, if you know anything about it, Ron Paul denunciation of interventionism and American, sort of the projection of American military power to all different corners of the globe. He's very much sort of an isolationist in that sense, and that doesn't necessarily jibe with the Tea Party, which tends to sort of reflexively support the current American military actions, in Libya, Afghanistan, Libya's, maybe some Tea Partiers are already worried about the fact we're fighting two wars, but certainly in Iraq and Afghanistan, then the Tea Party tends to wholeheartedly support those foreign policy endeavors. By and large, foreign policy hasn't been nearly as much of an issue in these debates, just simply because there isn't much of a debate on foreign policy anymore. Barack Obama ran for president running sharply against the Bush foreign policy, and yet he's continued just about, every major Bush, foreign policy, initiative. We're still in Iraq and Afghanistan. He is drawing things down, but it's been a long time, and especially in Iraq, the situation is sort of resolving itself there. But other than that, all the controversial stuff, the president has kept Guantanamo open, the Patriot Act is still in place, and all of these other things that Democrats supposedly were opposed to, since Obama's gotten off, he hasn't done anything about it. So there's no one to, they can't really run against the president on foreign policy, because he's continuing all the Bush foreign policy from before he was in office.
Just as a side note, how does that go over with the president's base?
The base is incredibly dispirited by this, and particularly in some of these things, like, for instance, the president's very explicit and repeated promises to close Guantanamo Bay. It's just not happening, and the White House has conceded as much. It's just too much of a problem to figure out what to do with all these, you know, extra national jihadis, who aren't uniformed combatants, and therefore, you know, NATO and Geneva Conventions and things like that don't apply to them. So it's a real sticky wicket. When, you know, what do? You try them in American courts and all these other things, and the fact that there isn't a due process for this really sort of gets the dander up of lefty civil libertarian types, and they've really wanted Obama to close Guantanamo Bay, but it's not going to happen. It's just politically too difficult.
Perhaps the issue of the Tea Party is taxes. Herman Cain, you mentioned before, he has kind of a very broad outline of 999 on taxes. What about the rest of the candidates that were there on Monday night?
This has been an interesting issue. I mean, because, you know, the tax plan is from the Republican side is seen as an integral part of getting the economy going again. And there's, you know, various competing ideas out there. Romney just, you know, released a 159-point plan, I believe it was. It was a really odd number plan for some reason. But where he outlines a number of very sort of specific policy details, and, you know, obviously it's kind of hard to discuss that, 159 points or whatever it is in the course of a debate. But, you know, suffice to say, you know, he has a lot of policy specifics to offer. John Huntsman has a tax plan that the Wall Street Journal has written glowingly of, where he basically slashes corporate tax rates, and tax rates generally across the board. Perry's so new to the race, he hasn't, you know, introduced much in the way of policy specifics, but, you know, certainly he falls back a lot on the Texas example where, you know, there is no income tax, and they have done a lot in that state to skew the tax code toward very pro-business, pro-job growth policies. It's an important part of the debate, but it's a little early yet to be, like, drilling down, you know, into the specifics. Now, there was one interesting moment there where someone asked Mitt Romney about the fair tax, which is a very popular idea among Tea Partiers, which is this tax plan that would basically impose, like, an across-the-board tax rate that you know, applies to just about every purchase or transaction in the economy that would supposedly be, you know, fairer. But it's got its detractors, and Romney was not afraid to, even though it was a Tea Party debate, basically shoot down what is a very popular Tea Party idea.
Rick Perry said something about allowing people to risk their own money and watching the economy take off like a rocket, and I thought to myself, you know, I want to be as optimistic as the next guy. But I don't think anyone realistically thinks the economy is going to take off like anything in the near future.
Well, you know, it is interesting. One of the interesting things about the current recession is that, and whenever we've had sort of past recessions, one of the great things about the American economy is the history of recessions being followed by, once we finally break out of them, very high periods of growth. I mean, even after the Great Depression, you know, as brutal as that was, you know, the 40s were a time of, you know, fantastic economic growth once the war was over. So everyone is trying to scratch their head and figure out what's going on now, because right now is actually sort of the anomaly in American history in terms of we're not seeing periods of high growth, even though the recession, you know, technically ended months ago. So, you know, I don't think that there's unwarranted reasons for, I don't think optimism is unwarranted. I mean, there's a number of things that America has going for us. I mean, we have, you know, even though our demographics aren't great in terms of, you know, the number of, you know, young people to old people, we actually have very good demographics when compared to Europe. We still have the most dynamic and innovative economy in terms of, you know, entrepreneurship and invention of new ideas and things like that. So there are reasons for optimism, and Perry in particular, when he says that, you know, he's not necessarily exaggerating. I mean, Texas has created over half of all jobs in the entire country in the last, you know, year or so. So, you know, when he says that, you know, one of his big selling points as presidential candidate is he can point to, you know, his own experience and say, you know, even through this recession, we've been able to create jobs and have companies moving in right and left to Texas because we've created the right environment. So, you know, there's a lot at play there, and I don't think voters are expecting the unemployment rate to drop significantly before Election Day. But you know, I don't think there's a reason that the presidential candidates on all sides shouldn't be, you know, at least publicly express some optimism about things.
Two quick final questions for you. Did the Tim Pawlenty endorsement of Romney seem to make any difference?
No. It didn't, because, you know, it was somebody on Twitter, I forget who it was, said it was like Miracle Whip endorsing mayonnaise. You know, they're very sort of similar centrist Republican governors. And then there was this an added layer of intrigue that really undercut the value of an endorsement, which is that Pawlenty left the race with a lot of campaign debt, and it basically became clear that Mitt Romney was helping him pay off that campaign debt. So it makes the endorsement look a little quid pro quo, as opposed to being, you know, an out-and-out endorsement. And then to make matters worse, Rick Perry basically immediately stepped all over that endorsement by announcing later that day that Bobby Jindal, the governor of a very popular Republican governor of Louisiana, was endorsing him. So, you know, the Pawlenty thing was not a game changer by any stretch of the imagination.
Finally, with only about 30 seconds, 6 months from now, who's left standing, or has anyone else joined the race on the GOP side?
I would be shocked if anyone else joined the race. The nominee is going to be Perry or Romney, Romney showed, I would have said Perry for sure a week or two ago, but Romney is showing some signs of life.
Mark Hemingway is the online editor for the Weekly Standard. He joined us live from Washington, D.C. You can read his columns under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Mark, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about one of the readings that is set for tomorrow as the church observes Holy Cross Day. Paul writing in 1 Corinthians about the word of the cross being folly and wisdom and weakness and power. Dr. Peter Scarry will be our guest.
Mr. Politician, please don't deceive us, Mr. Politician.
He's the most Lutheran man in the world.
I'm not always in Pensacola, Florida, but when I am, I attend Emmanuel Lutheran Church.
Congregation of Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Pensacola, Florida invites you to join us for divine services on Sundays at 8 or 10:30. Sunday school and Bible class at 9:15. Whether you're in Pensacola to enjoy the white sandy beaches of the Emerald Coast or for military training, we invite you to join us. Jesus is here. Word, water, bread and wine for you.
Emmanuel, God with us.
Stay Lutheran, my friends.
Y'all been hearing about Country Bob's all-purpose sauce and how it tastes great on any and everything you may be cooking and serving at your family dinner table. Well, over the years, I've discovered that Country Bob's is much more than that. You see, Country Bob's is that secret ingredient in many of my recipes, whether it be for chili soups or stews or that favorite marinade for the select meat of the day we're grilling. If you're interested in discovering the secret, log on to countrybobs.com and check out their blog, exchange recipes, or buy yourself a Country Bob's cookbook and become part of the Country Bob's family. And remember, it all comes down to the sauce.
Independent and in the black for 3 years and running. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
There's been huge news in the world of mental health, but you probably haven't heard about it. A meta-analysis was just published in the prestigious British Journal of Psychiatry by Dr. Priscilla Coleman of Bowling Green University. It shows nearly 10% of mental health problems in women are directly related to abortion. This incredible news should be getting headlines all over the world. The fact it's a meta-analysis is important because it combines studies that include a large number of subjects. The data is much more reliable than a single study. For example, the research shows South Korea has the world's highest rate of female suicide. It also aborts nearly half of all pregnancies. For the sake of women's health, we need to spread the word about this important study.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.